This is the Sports Gambling Podcast live on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Here are your hosts, Sean Green and Ryan Kramer.
I can't believe we're letting these guys on my network.
Welcome back, everyone. Sports Gambling Podcast live. Sean, Second Money Green, with my partner in picks. Ryan, Real Money Kramer. What's happening, Kramer?
Dare I say happy Saturday to the Central Time Zone.
There you go. Ryan's nailed rocking it. Friday Eve continues. Nice. And it is a rocking Friday Eve because thanks to the Pacers, we got a NBA Game 7. Needed it with no Game 7 in hockey. Joining us on the line, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line from the NBA Gambling Podcast, Mr. Scott Reichel. Scott, what's your level of surprise that the Pacers pushed it to Game 7 here?
Beginning of the series, very surprised. Mid-series, not surprised at all. I was on VSiN, I'd say, middle of last week, and I did pick Thunder in 7. So I did expect the Pacers to make it extremely competitive towards the end. I'm not going to pat myself on the back too much, though, because I think, like most people, we did not expect Game 7 in the first place. But I'm not complaining about it. It should be fun. We haven't had a Game 7 in the finals in a long time.
I know you share my appreciation of TJ McConnell's game, and you gave out him to have over 1.5 steals on our last podcast. Are we running it back for Game 7, TJ McConnell over 1.5 steals?
Yeah, 100%. He had 4. Why would I turn my back on it? It's plus 230. I'll keep going back to it. Yeah. He's had at least 2 steals in 4 of his last 5 games. He's also been one of Indiana's best players in the series. Elimination game, we'll see if he gets more minutes. But the point is, we know that he's a great defensive player in terms of anticipation, energy, and he's also been great at stealing inbound passes too. But the fact that he had 4 steals last game and it was plus 280, and now it's only down to plus 230, he's gone over this in 4 of the last 5. Plus 230. I'll gladly take that.
Scott is awesome at just hammering. And hammering.
I played more props this year than I did previous for the NBA, and it does seem like you find an angle, you keep pounding it out until either the market adjusts or the players. And the especially for this series, it feels like the prices have been kind of stubborn.
Yeah, look. I get to bet on McConnell every time with you because I watch you bet on it. Should I finally join the party? Scott, if I join the TJ McConnell party,
is he going to mush us? What
am I, the mush?
So I just want to ask you, though, you've been watching him go over in every single series. Why have you not joined already?
Because I'm worried it's going to end. It seems too good to be true. And Sean, it just feels like such a donkey.
For the TJ McConnell fan club, I'm saying stay away, Kramer.
Okay, I'm off.
We don't want any.
I don't want to be on.
All right.
I don't want to be on.
We don't need you on.
So conversation over.
We're on TJ McConnell. What about another player prop?
Yeah, so I'll stay with defense for this actual play. I'll go with Siakam. I like his over half a block at minus 114. Very cheap number. He's actually had a block in 7 straight games. Every game in the series, he has a block. Hmm. So you're looking at the fact that Siakam might play even more minutes at his game 7 after all. But the fact is, he's walking into a block every game in the series. He's had a block in 7 straight against OKC. Only minus 114 feels very cheap for a guy that should be on the floor a ton in this game. Give me Siakam over half a block at minus 114.
Yeah, no
half
good
anything.
Angle.
Great.
Well, just, yeah, I'm with you. Half of anything and over a half of anything is just such a fun way to watch a basketball game. It is tough to root for over half a block because you're just sitting there. You're like, oh, dribble over towards Siakam. Yeah, pump fake right into him.
There's
jumping
nothing
up.
To root for.
No, it's tough to root for a block. Scott, what about the total? We've seen it adjust all the way down from 230 down to 215. Are you touching the total at all?
I wanted to go with the under, but unfortunately, I think they might have overcorrected. So I think I'm gonna have to go with the over in this one. I don't feel great about it. I understand the argument is that it has been a pretty common trend over the years to blindly back unders in game sevens. This year, not so much. Hasn't really worked out that well. But I do think this total feels pretty low. I know game 6 went under. Both teams had the scrubs in for the final 12 minutes, means nothing to me. I think this total might be a little bit too low. Indiana still wants to play with pace. OKC probably wants to do the same thing. I think this total should be higher, so I'll go with over. Am I going to bet on it? Probably not. But I do think for a Game 7 reputation of course, being a lower-scoring defensive slugfest, that goes against what Indiana wants to do, because Indiana still wants to play with a lot of tempo. So I'll go over in this. I think that this one should be 217.5, 218.5, but 214.5 is a little bit too low for me. It's over or pass.
Good luck, Scott.
Yeah, Kramer's on.
Going head to head with Scott.
Kramer's on the.
I was very nervous when you asked him that question.
Kramer's on the under full game. I worry about in particular Pacers second half team total being the thing that ends up pushing this over. I could see them getting off to a slow start, OKC getting off to a hot start, and then Indiana closing it, making it competitive. Is there any? What about Miles Turner? He's been kind of a dud here lately. Do you think that continues, or do you think he has a bounce back game?
No, I'm going to keep fading him. I think that he has been a mess all series. I'll keep fading him here. The PRA is at 18.5. Give me the under at -105. He's at less than 17 in three of the last four. He's actually only averaging 17 PRA in the series so far. 18.5 feels too high. Carlisle has been benching him more often than you think because they've been using Siakam and Toppin together, and Toppin's been great. But Turner has been a mess from three, been a mess from the floor. Defensively, besides one half against Chet, he's really not done much defensively in the series from what I can tell. I think he's been a mess the entire series, so I'll fade him again. I'll dare him to prove me wrong. But he's been one of Indiana's worst players in the entire series. Give me the under 18.5 PRA.
Yeah, no, I'm even as a Pacers cheerleader over here, Miles Turner has been underwhelming.
Yeah, he did. He seemed to, not the only player on that team that disappears from game to game, but he seems to have disappeared.
Halliburton's right here, Kramer.
Pointing out, not you got to play all the games to be a great. True greatness plays every game.
Scott, I was maybe chasing it a little bit, but I saw that Halliburton at halftime of game six, he was 33-1 to be MVP. I fired on that. Now he's down to 15-1, 10-1, depending on where you're shopping. So at least I got a little CLV. Does Halliburton have a shot to get MVP? Get me excited about Halliburton winning MVP if it's possible.
So to make the case for Halliburton, we know the award in the past has been narrative driven, and you can make the argument that Halliburton being the leader of the team, playing through injury, toughing it out, ignoring the game with no made shots in an entire game.
Yeah,
you know, you make the argument he is a big reason emotionally why they might get over the finish line. I would vote for Siakam if I had to pick somebody in Indiana, just because I think he's been the best player, most consistent, and he did win the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. So it's not unprecedented for Siakam to win an award over Halliburton. Saw with Jaylen Brown last year. He won the MVP in the conference finals, then got it again over Tatum in the finals. I think Siakam would win it. If Halliburton has a monster game in game seven, he can definitely steal it. Or even if Indiana wins and he has himself a solid game, and maybe Siakam has a bit of an average at best game, it would all be narrative-based, just backing Halliburton, playing through injury, toughing it out, and finding a way to lead his team. I'll put quotes around a lead to get my point as the de facto best player on the team. I think Siakam would win. I just can't look past Halliburton making zero shots in an NBA Finals game. But I do think the voters maybe buy into the narrative a bit. Siakam should win it, in my opinion. But at 30+1, whatever number you got it at, it was worth the flyer.
Yeah.
The hilariousness of the Halliburton, like super rare triple-double with no turnovers. And then the super rare 0-0-0.
He's hot and cold.
He had two of the most unique games in NBA Finals history.
No,
on the extreme scale.
Every single game this entire Pacers run has been, you know, one out of 3,000 teams had a win percentage here where they're down 20. Everything has been historic. That's why I don't think you can rule this team out, even though game seven have been so favorable to the home team, to the favorite. I get it, but man, this Pacers team keeps breaking all these rules, the historic trends, the up and down wild games with Halliburton. And I'm with Scott. Like, part of the flyer is how well he was playing through injury in game six. It continued, or at least enough there in the second half. I think if he has some clutch moments in the second half, that if he hits a late shot, if it's close, if he hits another game winner, he's winning that award. I'm with Scott though. Like right now, if it's just everything's average, normal, you got to give it to Spicy P, who's had certainly the best series for the Pacers. But I still think there's a little window for our boy Halliburton to snake that out of him. Scott, I got to get you to pick a side here. Sitting at 7.5, what are you doing? Are you? Do you think the Thunder crush them? Is it close? Where are we at game score?
Yeah, so I'm tired of counting out the Pacers. I'll go with the Pacers plus the points in this game. The thing the Thunder is they did win a game 7 already. Denver's roster was decimated with injuries. I'm not going to read too much into it. The thing about the Thunder is that it feels like every time they're up double digits, they're always vulnerable to letting Indiana cut it to 5 for no reason, and Indiana goes on a massive run to make the game competitive again. I still think the Thunder are going to win, but I do think it's going to be a closer game. I don't see a lopsided matchup here. I think the Thunder might go up early. I think Indiana's going to hang in there. The thing about the Thunder, though, is they've been really bad from the outside when it comes to shooting. Chet's been a mess. Hardenstein's been a mess. A lot of the role players have not been very good on a consistent basis for them. I think Indiana can do enough to hang in there, but 7.5 is a lot of points for a very young team playing game 7. All the pressure's on OKC, as far as I'm concerned, because most people didn't give Indiana a shot to even get to game 7 in the first place. I think it'll be a nerve-wracking game for Thunder fans. I think they win the title, but I'll give the Thunder by 4. I think 7.5 is too many points.
Ooh, love it. Yes, sirs. All right. Hey, we're going to have Scott stick around, talk a little baseball for Saturday, including some plus money plays. You want to stay around. Sports Gambling Podcast live on Visa. Everyone, Sports Gambling Podcast live here on VSiN. Sean stacking the money green with my partner in picks, Ryan Real Money Kramer. What's happening, Kramer?
Sean, I was just sending a telegram out to the Central Time Zone, making sure they got the happy Saturday.
Breaking news: they got the happy Saturday. Well, hopefully it's a happy Saturday. Get some MLB winners from our good buddy Scott Rochelle, hanging out on the Progressive Guest Line, host on the MLB Gambling Podcast. Scott, what are you? What's jumping out at you here on the Saturday slate?
Yeah, so I'll start with some plus money. We saw the Brewers score 17 runs today. They're plus money again tomorrow. I'll take it at plus 116. The Twins have been horrible, and I feel like they're not being priced properly. They've lost 7 of their last 8 games. The Brewers are still plus 116, so I do like the fact that you're fading a team that's in free fall. Quintana's pitching for Milwaukee, been very good on the road. 28 and 3rd innings pitched, a 1.59 ERA. And you have Woods Richardson pitching for Minnesota, who's been really bad lately. The last 3 starts, 13 2/3 innings pitched, 13 runs allowed. You're the better starter. You have the better team based on current form, and they're plus 116. I'll keep fading Minnesota in Milwaukee in this game.
Yeah, no, I mean, coming off of 7, are you worried about a little regression when you hit 17 runs the game before?
I would say a little bit, except for the fact that some of those runs came against a position player who came into pitch. So it wasn't like all of those runs were against actual pitching. The stat padding kind of became a serious thing at the end. This word 17 runs, though, was 0 home runs, which is pretty rare. Hmm. But it's mostly fading Minnesota based on their current form. If you lose 7 of 8 and you're against a Milwaukee team that's pretty decent, I don't think you should be laying this big of a number. It's more based on the price.
Yeah, no, makes sense. What about you? What about your Yankees, Scott? Yankees, Orioles. What are you doing here? Are you getting involved?
If you've been fading the Yankees for the last week, you've made a lot of money because the team has not been very good, and they're laying big numbers every single game. I like the under in the game at 9.5. I see minus 102 listed on the screen right there. I'll take it. You're looking at the Yankees, who have scored less than 4 runs in 8 of their last 9. They forgot how to hit. It's a pretty painful team to watch right now, but I do think it should be a lower scoring game. Eflin is pitching for Baltimore. The Yankees have seen him a lot. They've not been good against him, though. 160 plate appearances against Eflin with the active roster, a 188 batting average, and a 244 on base. Schmidt, though, has actually been pretty good for the Yankees lately. Last 4 starts, 25 1/3 innings pitched, 3 runs allowed. Baltimore's offense has been fine recently, but I think Schmidt can go okay. The Yankees' offense, though, has been a mess. 9.5 is way too high. They got a Weaver back, so the bullpen should be more intact for the Yankees. Give me the under 9.5. Then the price is pretty cheap.
I feel like old timey baseball takes. This is the part of the season where managers have to do the most managing. When are the Yankees going to fix this problem, Scott? This is what it's been like to, I mean, not that I'm a Yankees fan anymore. I don't want to lie to the people, but this is what it's been like to be a Yankees fan for the better part of two decades.
Well, I'm going to ask what do we do?
Do they put a bullet in the head?
I was going to say, where do you start the problem? Is it Boone? Is it Cashman? Is it Steinbrenner's son? Where do you want to give the responsibility to? You can blame everybody involved.
I mean, the Cashman's not going to put a bullet in his own head. So let's start with Boone.
I mean, he keeps getting extensions for doing nothing. So I guess, you know, the Yankees are going to keep using him. They made the World Series last year. I thought the AL was kind of a joke last year, and then the Dodgers beat him. He should have been fired after Cortez came in game one. But I digress. Yeah, I'm not a Boone fan at all. I think the Yankees have been a team kind of coasting on some star power and star talent, but I think they're a poorly run organization, at least based on the game-to-game operations. The bullpen usage is questionable. The base running is a mess. They might be the worst base running team in the entire league, and it's been a problem for a couple of years. I do not think they're a fundamentally sound team. I'll put it that way. I'm not a Boone guy. I'm not really a Cashman guy either. I think Steinbrenner as an owner has been a mess. I miss his father. I'll put it that way. But to answer your question, where do you start? It starts with Steinbrenner, but it feels like he doesn't care enough to actually make the necessary moves. So we might be stuck here.
Classic rich guy kid.
Well, yeah, he's you know, printing money and yeah, the rich guy kid doesn't have he's not paying private eyes to spy on or whatever those crazy Steinbrenner
stories. They're selling $500 steaks out in the left right field. He doesn't care about how good the team is.
He's doing all right either way, win or loss. Scott, there was a huge Red Sox trade. Devers gone. Now the Red Sox on the road at the Giants. What do you make of this Red Sox team post trade? And then any thoughts for that game?
Yeah, it feels like the Red Sox have another owner that's trying to save some money. He's a bit invested in European soccer, so he might be trying to save some money for Liverpool. So he's been kind of cutting ties with some star Boston players. They traded away Betts a couple years ago. Now they traded away Devers. Devers, they didn't want to pay pretty much any of the money on the contract because of the, I'd say, distraction of him not wanting to play other positions. And the Giants said, we'll pay the entire contract. And the Red Sox threw him away, basically. So, yeah, I understand what the angle is. The point is, I think the team's not very good based on offensive talent. The pitching's been up and down. The bullpen's been a mess. But the lineup was okay. Now Devers is gone, so the offense isn't very good. Now, they might get by anyway in this series because the Giants' offense has been fine as well. They had a pretty crazy game tonight. But for the most part, both teams have not really been hitting that well. But I actually like the first five team total under for the Giants. It's pretty juicy at minus 145. I still like it, though. They're averaging just 2.11 runs per game in the first five, which does rank 21st in the league. And Bayo's pitching for Boston, who's been very good lately, actually. Last five starts, 20 innings, pitched a 2.89 ERA. 2.5 runs, though, in the first five does feel pretty high for a Giants team in a very pitchers-friendly ballpark. Bayo's been good. Give me the Giants first five under 2.5 runs and minus 145.
Scott, we had your buddy on, one of the co-hosts on the MLB Gambling Podcast, our friend as well, Adam Rosenberg. He is all about playing these markets, the double play parlay market. And then I saw you tweet this out, and we have the tweet. I very much enjoyed this tweet. It seems like you're on a dating app, and I got with my wife now, pre dating app, but this looks like a prompt for a dating app where I go crazy for crazy and creative men. And then you respond, crazy and creative. Can I interest you in a double play parlay? Scott, did you get a response back on this dating app? Is this a new icebreaker?
See, the thing about dating apps is, especially for Hinge, you might have to wait a couple of weeks before you get a response because they don't actually check the platform. I'll get back to you on the update. But as of right now, no. But I'll tell you what, if the double play parlay cashes, then I'm fine with it. But, you know, they say that there's an expression, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So why not? I'm changing something up. Why not?
Well, and this is great because Scott's so committed to the game. He's like, Well, I also I'm gonna be checking out some opportunities on the dating app. Also, be plugging the MLB gambling podcast.
Also, what if the response is yes?
Yes. Well, and then we might be meeting Miss Reichel. I mean, if this leads to romance, Ryan, this is gonna be awesome.
Yes.
So we'll stay tuned. Maybe we'll get an update down the line. Scott, what about Saturday slate? Any other games jumping out of you? Parlays, props, team totals? What are you doing?
Yeah, so I'll go to another total, actually, between the Rangers and the Pirates. These teams can score to save their lives. Give me the under, 8.5. I think the total's too high at -105, especially. Pirates are dead last in the league in runs per game. Rangers not much better. They rank 26th. Rangers, though, have scored less than 4 runs in 5 of their last 7. Pirates have scored less than 4 runs in 7 of their last 8. Rocker's been pretty bad this season, but he was good last start for Texas. And Keller has a pretty rough season so far. His ERA is okay, but he's 1-9 because his team does not score any runs for him at all. So with the lack of run support entirely, both teams can score. 8.5 feels very high for a total. Give me the under in that game.
Smash it. Yeah, no. The totals, I think, especially this time of year, good angle as always, Scott.
And if you're going deep into baseball, if you're reading about these seams coming out of Costa Rica that maybe a little bit more drag on the baseballs this year for some odd reason, not able to fix the problem, but the balls are traveling up to, I think, on average 4.5 feet.
I love a good ball conspiracy theory. Scott, I got.
Did you know they're all hand sewn? Every baseball is hand sewn. That seems crazy.
That is crazy. Scott, I remember there was a breaking news. The torpedo bats were going to destroy Major League Baseball. It was a massive story for, I feel like, 3 days in April or May. And then, I don't know, someone was asking me, they go, have torpedo bats ruined the game? I go, I don't remember any torpedo bat updates. 30 seconds. Where are we at with torpedo bats? What's going on?
Yeah, where we're at is the Yankees went 3 straight games with 0 runs. So apparently it's not doing much anymore for the Yankees, but it wasn't illegal. A bunch of teams copycatted it like most leagues do. You copycat what works, and then people stop talking about it. But it's the Yankees. Yeah. People want to make a controversy out of it. 0 runs in 3 straight games. They should make bigger torpedoes because they can't hit the ball right now.
Sunk our battleship. Always good time with Scott Reichel. You can bet on that when we return.
This is the Sports Gambling Podcast live on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back, everyone. Sports Gambling Podcast live. I'm Sean, stacking the money green with my partner in picks, Ryan, Real Money Kramer. What's happening, Kramer?
Sean, we went real deep.
Yes,
we went off the grid this week.
Oh, we did. Yeah. Fun new segment. Great for the summer, summer months. It's a series called You Can Bet On That, right? You can bet on it, or you can bet on that.
Either way,
you can bet on it, where we find some of the weirdest, wackiest markets where our buddies near the equator are hanging numbers.
Yep.
Now, I know you sharps are going to want to come in and smash the market. They might be limited,
maybe,
but this one struck my eye for the literal dog days of summer. Kramer, what market are we breaking down?
Well, we have the World Dog Surfing Championships.
Yes, let's go.
Which,
and this is being televised.
I need to
ESPN2, aka ESPN8, the Ocho. They do that segment.
I love how they leaned into the mocking of dodgeball. Couple of things to point out. We are journalists. First of all, although this is the surfdogchampionships.com,
yes,
they call it a World Dog Surfing Championship. It should be noted, Sean, that there are multiple events that consider themselves to be a World Dog Surfing Championship.
Can't even sort this out.
There's a little bit of a drama between the Northern and Southern California dog surfing events. Now, as someone who's been in the waters, both in the Southern and the Northern parts of California, you're surfing up in Northern California. I'll give them the credit for being the world championship. So We are talking about the World Dog Surfing Championships. It's held in Northern California in Pacifica at a beach called Linda Mar Beach.
Okay.
It's been held since 2016. So this is not some, rinky dink operation here. Unfortunately, there was a 2-year hiatus due to COVID.
No, they didn't make the dogs wear masks.
The dogs,
put a dog mask on.
The dogs were not allowed to.
They couldn't compete. Just no fans. Let the dogs compete. Boy, we have to recognize a season without dog surfing.
They were worried about the dogs getting a little too close to each other. So they wanted to,
yeah.
For 2 years, they had to cancel it.
And sniffing butts. God knows.
And worth noting that the last couple of years, as there typically is in Northern California, there's been some weather. So you're going to need a dog with some good, lower body, low pad level, all that good jazz. So what kind of competition is this? How does this work? Well, required equipment. You need a board.
Okay.
You got to have a life jacket. So the dogs are wearing life jackets. And based on the pictures I've seen, a lot of sunglasses on the dogs.
Really?
A lot of sunglasses on the dogs.
It's not required though.
Not required, but they're there. They're judged on length of ride, technique, confidence. That's very interesting. And size of wave. Sean, there is an asterisk here. Other style aspects can be included. That's why the sunglasses are there. So how does it work?
I see a dog with a mohawk. Oh,
the dogs
come on,
have
give him
the dogs have style. So how does it work? Well, they basically have heats for each type of dog.
Yes.
Small dog under 20 pounds, 21 to 40 is medium, 41 to 60 is large, very large. Shaming on weight, 61 pounds or more. That's a wide range of heavyweight class.
Do these surfing dogs cut weight, Ryan? Do we have to worry about dogs just going on some sort of bone broth cleanse?
Well, it seems like you can also just enter the tandem dogs heat, which is multiple dogs any size, no restrictions. And then there is a category for human dog tandem.
Oh wow!
One human, one dog, any size. That goes for the dog and the human. So now. At the end of all of these heats, Sean, we have one final championship. Now, the championship last year was taken down by, how would you pronounce the favorite here at 2-1? Cacao?
Cacao. C-A-C-A-U.
Who is a chocolate Labrador from, you guessed it, Sean, one of the surfing capitals of the world, Brazil.
Really?
A lot of surfers.
You fly your dog from Brazil? To Northern California?
Yes. In fact, last year, the 2024 event, there was $12,000 raised due to, with crowdfunding efforts to address some of the financial challenges in hosting the event, which I'm sure is traveling to the event, which, by the way, those rough conditions that Cacao operated in, a beautiful chocolate Labrador. Shocking note on the win last year for the favorite this year at 2-1, Cacao, 6,000 people in attendance.
Really?
That's more than the entire UFL season.
Yes. That, UFL catching strays.
Catching big
strays. Surf dog championship.
So we laid it all out. History, Cacao 2-1, the favorite this year, won last year. Again, the chocolate Labrador from Brazil. You also have, some performers from 2023, I believe the horse, dog.
I'm talking dogs, right?
I got horse on the mind. Virtual Kentucky Derby qualification. It's thing. Hit me up in the DMs if you want to have a late night conversation with me. But I believe Delilah, previous champ in 2023, is going off at 6-1 this year.
Okay.
And I have one more note. Carson, who is going off at 25-1, had a nice performance in 2023. I think they're mispricing here because basically those are the only dogs I could find with any sort of real history here. And
pedigree, if you will.
Yeah, and honestly, just looking at the types of dogs that have won, I personally would have thought heavier dog, better chance to keep that board stable.
Yeah, pace.
Just But maybe it doesn't matter because we're seeing terriers doing well.
Yeah, I think you're either like a surfing dog or you're not, right?
Well, but even types of dogs, right? Like bulldogs, I would think lower. But you got labs, you got terriers, you got French bulldogs, you got cattle dogs. So maybe it's just a pure intelligence thing. Maybe it's just a vibe. And I think back to the shades on the dogs, the Mohawks on the dogs. We don't have access to this. And Sean, you did pledge that these types of events will not be something that breaks you like the Puppy Bowl did back in 2016.
Well, because I got inside info.
28-3. Shout out to Matt Ryan.
Supposedly inside info for the Puppy Bowl before the Patriots Falcon Super Bowl. I lost a tremendous amount of money because I was like, oh, it's an inside job. Of course, I'm going to bet on an inside job.
Yeah, those someone things claimed
to know a guy the Puppy Bowl already filmed. And they were dead wrong. I lost a bunch of money. So
I missed one of my notes. Cherry going off at 12-1 did take down the event when it was held in Newport. And so, or maybe this was a Southern one. So Cherry going off at 12-1 has some experience. Real quick, Sean, I missed this in my research, but it turns out I lied. They did not skip 2 years for COVID.
Oh, wow.
They actually had an event, a live stream hybrid event where they did Zoom. They did live heats over Zoom.
Oh, my God. What?
This is an amazing amount of effort for dogs to be surfing.
So what's the play? I did a little research, Ryan.
Oh, no, you didn't. What do you like?
The first ever surfing pit bull, okay. Faith, is coming in at 6-1. I mean, I'm just basing it mostly off of the World Dog Surfing Instagram. She has her own handle, Faith Surfs.
Show me some competitions.
Yeah.
Show me some competitions for Faith.
Okay, she made the cover of the Best Waves contest on ESPN. So,
because I'm realizing we're not even going to have the time to talk about my theory on these judges.
What's your theory?
Well, the judges are the same every year.
Yeah.
But I did notice this year there is an empty spot
for
some sort of municipality for the city where the event's being held.
So city's coming in.
Could we have a fixed job?
What's your official play?
Well, Faith, it sounds like Faith's got the money. You know what? Give me Carson, 25-1. These are dogs surfing. Why would you take the chalk? What kind of animal are you? Give me the long shot.
You're right. It's under dogs. It's right there in the name. Yeah. I'll tail your Carson.
And 25-1. Let's go Carson and Cherry. Cherry 12-1 has experience on the top of the podium. Carson as well at 25-1.
Yeah. If Carson's, what do they get? Do they get a prize? Belly rub? What are the
they
judges?
Get to live. They get to surf, probably get some treats.
Yeah.
And their owners probably take home a sweet pile of cash.
I just love the idea that maybe it's rigged. A dog takes a fall, jumps off his board.
Don't say
maybe
that.
Maybe we can talk to Cacao or Faith or some of these chocolate.
Looks
favorites.
Like the winner will also get a long supply of Chef Pet pure pet food.
Carson, long shot.
Let's go.
25-1. When we return, we close things out with best bets. That's right. Our best bets. Saturday, Sunday, and some NFL futures. Sports Gambling Podcast live here on VSiN.
The Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back, everyone. Sports Gambling Podcast live. Sean Stacking the Money Green with my partner in picks, Ryan Real Money Kramer. What's happening, Kramer?
Are you going to be putting any of those dog surfing bets in your pocket?
Well, stay tuned, Ryan. We're about to reveal our best bets.
Excellent.
And of course, our best bets brought to you by the G-Bank Trifecta. That's right. The $500 Trifecta G-Bank. First bet and VSiN coming together. Step one, open a G-Bank Visa signature card. And in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at first bet. To trigger the $500 trifecta, you'll get $200 in cashback rewards on the G-Bank Visa signature credit card. And first bet will give you a $100 deposit match. The last leg of the trifecta. That's right. A VSiN Pro subscription through October 31st at a $200 value. That's $500. Trifecta from G-Bank, first bet and VSiN. VSiN.com/G-Bank. VSIN.com/G-Bank. And it's for new customers only. T's and C's do apply. Kramer. Would you like to go first with your best bets?
Sure. we're going to disagree with Scott Reichel under 215. For the record, he said he didn't like 214 and a half under 215.
Okay.
I'm going to take that SGA. I was able to get SGA minus 205 on the MVP. SGA over 7.5 first quarter points plus 110. That's the end of my basketball bets for the season.
Okay.
Thank the good Lord. On to football. Kansas circled this last year when we discussed the lack of a home field. No matter what was going to happen, I was going to love them this year. Over 7.5 wins at juicy plus odds, plus 150.
Yeah, I love it.
Also throwing a dart on Houston to win the Big 12 at 40-1. Hopefully we get an opportunity to monetize our position there. Love, as Colby calls him, road rash face, Bobby Petrino, over 5.5 wins for Arkansas. Woo pig suey, as Sean likes to say, plus 120. Just in case, give me Kyren Williams, offensive player of the year, 80-1. I'm going to take Max Crosby, defensive player of the year, 14-1. And also, just in case, Josh Sweat. Moonshot, 150-1, defensive player of the year.
You like that nugget I gave you?
That was fabulous.
His
best season came with Jonathan Gannon. Jonathan Gannon gave him a big contract. And as Sean will remind you as well, I'm going Carson 25-1.
Yep.
Sherry.
I'm just going
12-1.
Going Carson.
Oh, I'm taking you got to take two bullets into the dog surfing championship.
For me, give me Pacers minus 3.5 plus 340. Pacers plus 7.5. I was debating to play the points, and I'll take the 7.5. TJ McConnell over 9.5 points.
Smash.
TJ McConnell over 0.5 first quarter rebound. Then our buddy Spicy P. Kramer, you were Googling a bunch. Did we figure out why he's called Spicy P?
Teammates. He actually, in classic fashion, the nickname that you wanted is not the nickname that you get. He wanted to be called P Skills.
Okay.
Ended up Spicy P. Works out better, but does not like spicy food.
And did they explain why?
Why he doesn't like spicy food?
No, why he was called Spicy.
Oh, just his, because of his spicy play.
Okay, got it.
I mean, again, yeah, because he's not spicy off the court.
No,
the opposite. It's one of those like calling a big guy tiny or whatever.
Oh, so maybe he's really bland, and so they jokingly call him Spicy.
You know, they claimed it was his on-court prowess.
Pascal Siakam over 27.5 points and rebounds. I think he has a big game. I hope the Pacers win, and either I get the Halliburton MVP or the Spicy P MVP home. Jalen Williams over 1.5 first quarter rebounds. Shop around. You can get that at 140. And shout out to listener Adam Awesomeo for tipping me on that one. Big 12, I'm with you. Kansas, yeah, over 7.5 wins. We're big Lance Leipold fans. The fact that they get to play their games in a real home stadium. Jalen Daniels is healthy to start the season. They could easily go 8-4. Take a little long shot. You know, Gundy over at Oklahoma State, really bad year, outlier of a year. And he could have probably, he ended up taking less money because they wanted to, they were trying to maybe move things around. He took less money for the NIL. He seems ready to go for a bounce back year, and Gundy is good for some good years in the Big 12. I think this is a nice bounce back opportunity for him. 55-1 to win the Big 12. Yes, I know it's a long shot, but after that disaster of a year, I really think they can bounce back.
Again, how many teams is it appropriate to take in the Big 12? There's so many fun long shots. And again,
the chalk isn't that strong.
Well, no, but you're also
compared to the field.
You're just playing that scenario where you have, maybe you do have that more dominant team, but then you have 3, 4, 5 teams log jammed, a win or two behind.
I'm just looking to get 8-4, 9-3 and hit the tiebreaker to get you into the conference championship game. And I think that's a good way to attack things. We came close to hitting some long shot ones last year with these like jammed up conferences where they just keep adding in teams. I think it's a good way to attack the market. And of course, Carson Surf Dog Championship. I'm tailing. See what I did there, Ryan? Tail.
That's very good.
Plus 2,500. Don't let Carson get hot. I've had some bad luck with Carson's in my life, so this is a nice redemption.
And apologies to those who pointed out to us that we did skip the the puppy Stanley, the Stanley Cup version of the Puppy Bowl.
Yeah, what do they call it?
I have no idea. I just know that
it's got to be urinating. Stanley Pup, right?
Yeah.
So I'm assuming they call it Stanley Pup.
A lot right of there. Urination was going on. It was a little
the ice. I'm sure they melted the ice.
A little inappropriate.
Eat the yellow ice in the Stanley Pup. Okay. Just in case the Jets defense gets back to where it was. The Jets defense was pretty good before they fired Robert Saleh. You bring in Aaron Glenn. It's a talented defense. What if former defensive rookie of the year, and he's only year three, ends up having a great season, or maybe it's year four, defensive player of the year, Sauce Gardner, 175-1. I will have a paper ticket in my hands coming up shortly. And Aiden Hutchinson, he's the chalky play that's going to cover some of my crazier, wild, just in case bets at 7-1. So nice slate here. Going to be super stoked about watching game seven, knock on wood. Yes, sirs, get it done. I know our buddy on the network, Wes, will be really excited. He went to, I think, game 3 and 4 in Indiana.
I mean, you want to talk about the ultimate tragic magic. Jim Irsay.
Oh.
Involved.
There you go.
Last thing he said publicly on social media.
Was, go Pacers.
Go Pacers.
What a way to go out. What a ride. That would be super fun. And Kramer, what do we got coming up on our podcast? Of course, subscribe to the Sports Gambling Podcast. Tune into us next week, live here on VSiN, as always, Friday, 11 o'clock East.
Well, we trapped Colby for the week. Yeah. So we're talking, we're going to continue our college football series with the SEC, the Big Ten. And then we'll jam in a little fantasy football and then go right back to the college.
So. Oh, the top 10 list.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, last year I shocked the world by leaving Christian McCaffrey off my top 10. I said he was not going to play a full year. I was just decimated by the fantasy community.
People
stood my ground.
The fantasy community is one of the harsher. I mean, people complain about sports gambling, social
toxic
media.
Wait it's till not you as get bad into as fantasy.
You, I dare you. Quick story.
Yeah,
Sean and I were at a fantasy expo years ago.
And really stays with
you. We're just mingling. We're being friendly. We're at our table. We're pushing the brand, and guys are coming around. They're just like, you know, taking little quick hitters. What's your take? What's your take? And I forget what it was. Zeke's not a top 50 fantasy running back. Legitimately got upset with us for not taking the exercise seriously.
Yes.
Legitimately.
Your rankings aren't real. Yeah, it's fantasy football. We're trying to have fun. Hey, wake up tomorrow with the VSiN Weekend Morning Line at 10 a.m. East, followed by Ready, Set, Bet starting at 1 o'clock. Then stick around. Live Bet Saturday at 4 o'clock East. 4 o'clock running all the way to 11 p.m. So I'm sure they'll be talking a bunch about NBA Finals Game 7, some MLB stuff. I'm sure they'll be hitting on some early college football stuff, but yeah, tons of action and a great, great second experience for the games going on Saturday and then Sunday. Tune in. I'm sure VSiN, get the VSiN Watch app, get all the picks leading up to NBA Finals Game 7, and then instant reaction right after the game and all week long. And a big thanks to all our guests: CJ Sullivan, Scott Reichel, Colby Dant. Big thanks to everyone behind the glass making us look good. And of course, producer Johnny and Kramer.
Thank you for participating in the Sports Gambling Podcast.
For the Sports Gambling Podcast, I'm Sean Stacking the Money Green. He's Ryan.
You got this, Carson.
Kramer, let it ride.